The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. What a show. Brock Heward's going to join us at 1:30 to talk about the Seahawks and the upcoming Apple Cup on Friday. King County presiding Superior Court Judge James Rogers, he's going to join me at 12:30 because I've been very critical of the revolving door of justice with our courts, all these recidivists walking free on our streets. And I'm going to give a key player in our judicial system a chance to respond to my criticism. That'll be at 12:30. But I'm outraged by this judge decision this morning. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Well, our top story, a King County judge this morning decided to, for now, overturn the will of the voters. The voters very clearly said yet again that they want $30 car tabs in this state. But Seattle, King County, they said, no, we want to keep collecting your money. And a judge went along with it this morning in a ruling. The initiative sponsor is Tim Eyman. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Good afternoon, Tim.
Hey, Barry, how you doing?
Okay, so clearly the will of the voters, the politicians don't care about it. A lot of people have been asking me, why even bother to vote when they're going to figure out a way, if it means getting our money, they're going to figure out a way to keep getting it. So give me your read on this judge's decision this morning.
Well, it's obviously completely maddening and infuriating, but the reality is you just got to lay it on the doorstep of Bob Ferguson. There's just a basic thing that we're dealing with here is that King County was one of the plaintiffs in the case. This is a King County judge deciding it, an obvious conflict. Bob Ferguson at no point did a motion for change of venue, didn't challenge the judge who was a Jay Inslee appointee. These are basic things that any vigorous defense would do, in which the fact that he was asked to recuse and chose purposely to stay on and not allow an outside law firm to do it makes it very clear to me that he sabotaged this initiative on purpose from within. It's so corrupt and so wrong, but that's what we're facing. Essentially, in a way, Bob Ferguson won for his real client, which is Sound Transit.
Yeah, and Bob Ferguson, of course, has a fiduciary responsibility to the voters to defend this yes vote. It's mind-boggling to me that they did not get a change of venue, because there were a lot of judges in the state who could have heard this case without it being heard in the county that is the plaintiff. I mean, that's unbelievable to me.
It's truly maddening, and the defense they gave yesterday was just absolutely pathetic. I mean, real easy, straightforward questions that I had provided to them as far as answers to it, and they would just whiff on it. I mean, the voters were confused by what was in it. One of the most basic defenses is you look just not at the ballot title, but what's in the voter's pamphlet. And in the voter's pamphlet, it said very clearly by opponents' arguments, if you vote for this, you're voting against these voter-approved taxes. And this judge was saying, you know, I just don't know if voters knew that they were repealing these voter-approved taxes.
Well, that's what I really find amazing.
Going, AG, say it's in the voters' pamphlet, and they were not making that argument at all.
Well, I mean, there are a couple aspects of this. Number one, the No campaign spent $4.5 million. There was no yes campaign besides my radio show.
Mm-hmm.
The No campaign spent $4.5 million, told the voters all the reasons not to vote for this, and the voters said yes anyway. So I don't know how a judge could say that the voters didn't know what they were voting for. The message was as publicized as could be through all of those campaign ads.
And what was so stupid of the Attorney General's office during their argument is they talked about the advertisements, and the judge goes, I don't know what was with the advertisements. I care about what the voters knew when they were voting. And I'm like, Say it was in the voter's pamphlet. Everybody had a voter's pamphlet. It was right there in the voter's pamphlet. They didn't make that basic argument that it doesn't matter what's out there, legally relevant-wise, but absolutely in court case after court case, what's in the voter's pamphlet's what's relevant, and the opponents themselves said, if you vote for this, you're overturning these voter-approved things. But yet they were saying, we don't know if the voters knew that they were overturning these Sound Transit taxes. Of course they knew. It was right there in the voter's pamphlet.
Well, there's another issue that is, that this brings up as well, and that is when Sound Transit 3 was on the ballot, mm-hmm. Sound Transit lied to the legislature to get it on the ballot in the first place. Sound Transit lied to the voters about how much the tabs would cost. They said it'll cost mm-hmm. about $80, and it's turned out to be several hundred dollars for most people. And it is such a one-way street that screws over the taxpayers, and that is Sound Transit can do the most deceptive things to get our money, and yet the judge today says, but we can't, by vote, restrict how much money we give them. I mean, I'm beside myself here.
Well, and this insane argument that the plaintiffs have proven their harm. And I'm thinking, okay, the harm to your employer, Judge, to King County themselves, has proven to you that your employer is going to be hurt by this. What about the voters are going to be hurt after December 5th when they're continuing to pay $300, $500, $800, $1,000 for car tabs, yet for three times the voters have said, no, we want to make it illegal for taxes and fees above $30. I mean, I'm telling you, this is such a crisis because we're dealing with the absolute destruction of democracy where it's supposed to be one person, one vote, 1.1 million people voted yes, 900,000 voted no, and yet we have a political system that says no. The no vote actually counts more than the yes vote.
Well, and I mean, it's even more dangerous than that, Tim, because it's not just the political system that's rigged, but it is the collusion of the media with mm-hmm. Sound Transit. I mean, you know, the Seattle Times, Sound Transit's a huge advertiser, and nobody is going to convince me that that has not affected how the Seattle Times, and they say, no, we keep advertising and our reportage separate. But nobody's going to convince me that that hasn't influenced a business that is failing and needs every penny it can get. And they have colluded with Sound Transit, with the Democratic Party, to screw over the voters here. And when you have both politics and almost everybody in the media colluding mm-hmm. against us in our vote, then we really are looking at the end of democracy in our region.
Well, and I really like your point about, you know, why even vote? Is people losing faith in their government, faith that their vote even counts? I mean, a government can't function without the consent of the governed, and if the governed are simply so disillusioned with the system that they just give up, then they just bulldoze right over us. So, 3 points just real quick. Bob Ferguson sabotaged this thing. He sabotaged it from the beginning. There's no way that we can accept this. Two, Jay Inslee absolutely must call a special session and absolutely act on this thing and make it very clear that they respect what the voters did. Jay Inslee must do that or else everyone's going to lose faith in it. And three, this is something we can all do. My tabs are expired. I refuse to renew my car tabs as long as these people are law-breaking against very clearly a law the voters ended up voting for, and I think it's very, very important for everyone to do that. The put pressure on the political system is for the citizens just to refuse to comply, and I think this is a very, very important thing. Quickly, chances are the ticket's going to be a heck of a lot cheaper than your car tabs anyway, but even more importantly, it's not a crime to not renew your tabs. Not even a civil infraction to renew your tabs. It's a non-moving violation. There are millions of cars on the road. Likelihood of being pulled over is slim. In the event you are, tell him that this is political protest. If you refuse to do it, please just give me a warning. If he gives you a warning, that's great. If he gives you a ticket, do not pay it. Appeal it, and let's see if we can pack those traffic courts with a whole lot of patriotic citizens that say, I refuse to comply with a tyrannical government that will not listen to the people.
I agree in theory with everything you are saying, but then if you don't pay it and if the courts come after you, you're going to see fines and you're going to see everything doubled or tripled, and they're going to say, no, you can't drive unless you give us $1,000 by the time it's all said and done.
I think it's very important to always remember that we're dealing with, like, it's like $135, and I don't want to dismiss that $135 isn't a lot of money, but the reality is when you appeal it to a judge, the worst you'll get is it knocked down to about $75, which is the court cost. I really think that if we comply with what they're doing to us and everyone just renews their car tabs and goes along about their lives, that's exactly what the political system wants, is for us to cower ourselves and go sheep on them and just roll over and say, you know what, you just can't beat City Hall. The way to put pressure on the political system is for the citizens to simply not comply with it. This is civil disobedience. Let's just say everything you just described sounds a heck of a lot less extreme than what happened to the people such as Gandhi that fought against with civil, peaceful disobedience, noncompliance. I think this is a very, very important principle that we're fighting for.
Okay, you're with me, but I'm not going to compare not paying our tabs with Gandhi. You went too far once again, Tim, crying out loud.
But I love the quote from Gandhi. He said, you know, are you just going to, you expect us, the British, just walk out of here? And he said, 100,000 British cannot make 350 million Indians do something they don't want to do. You're dealing with a handful of law enforcement people covering millions of vehicles on the road. They're never going to be able to ticket all of us. The reality is, I know a guy went 8 months, never ended up having his car tabs renewed. When he was pulled over, he said, hey, I just haven't gotten around to it. The guy gave him a warning. I'm calling on all law enforcement officers to simply recognize that this is political protest and to use the discretion that you're granted and say, maybe this person deserves a warning.
Okay. Well, that's a decision everybody's going to have to make on their own. That's an individual.
Exactly.
I can't advocate people doing something that might get them in a financial, even more of a financial jackpot.
And I think it's very important to know, I am leading by example. My tabs are expired. I'm driving down the road right now with expired tabs. I'm willing to face the consequences for it. That is one of the things you do when you have civil disobedience. But I think we're fighting for a very important principle. Just real quick, Bob Ferguson sabotages. The whole system has absolutely broken down. Jay Inslee has an opportunity to do some leadership and actually do what Gary Locke did 20 years ago and have a special session.
Never happened.
Citizens do not comply.
That'll never happen. Jay Inslee's in the pocket of Sound Transit. And I will say in closing, and I've said this many times on many issues, when two of the most powerful forces in our world, government and the media, when they collude against us as private citizens, as taxpayers, we're in a very precarious place. So, all right, we'll stay in touch, Tim. I appreciate it.
And what's that website? I think it's timforgov.com. Timforgov.com. Give it your consideration.
Yeah, wait until we see if I run or not before I start doing that.
Before you put out the site. There you go.
I'm not promoting my competition. Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Matt. Okay.
Tim Iman joining us. Love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Man, I'm looking at the text messages, and we are getting a ton. So I'll sort through them, and I'll share some of your comments a little bit later in the show this afternoon. Okay, next up in the Big Lead, I told you about this yesterday. While the city of Seattle, King County, they're crying poverty, they say that you can't have your $30 car tabs because we need the money. And yet, city of Seattle has just passed a $6.5 billion budget. And I want to remind you where this money's going. More than $100 million a year is going to go to the homelessness industrial complex. These are the people making six figures, the people who are getting rich off the homelessness problem. They're going to spend $56 million on the Seattle streetcar. The absolute boondoggle. But we can't have $30 car tabs. It's unbelievable. And that is your Big Lead.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
And then you have the problem with crime and a revolving door. And I've been very critical of our judges who let criminals walk free. The judges respond. King County Superior Court presiding judge James Rogers joins me next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, it is an issue that comes up all the time. We hear about all of these recidivists, repeat offenders who have been convicted in one case, Francisco Calderon, been convicted 72 times and still walks free. A Seattle judge actually put him in jail for a year, and the Seattle City prosecutor wasn't happy about that. But there is a perception that we have a revolving door of justice. And this came up again on Monday when a guy named Anthony Chilcott, he had been arrested by Black Diamond Police on October 28th. The prosecutor requested a $5,000 bond, and a Judge Allred, said, no, we're going to release him on personal recognizance. He then went on to steal a truck with a dog inside. There was a police chase, and Anthony Chilcott was killed by the police in the ensuing melee. I wanted to shine some light for you, my listener, on exactly what the process is. And so I'm happy to tell you that the presiding judge with King County Superior Court, Judge James Rogers, joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Your Honor, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Dory, I'm happy to be here and talk with you and have your listeners get some information about how the justice system works.
Okay, and I know that you are somewhat restricted talking about open cases, and let me ask you, since Anthony Chilcott, since he is now dead, is that an open case? Are you still restricted in being able to talk about that case specifically?
You know, I can talk about the case to some degree. You're absolutely correct. Since he's dead, the case is closed. The case has actually been dismissed. What I'm not going to do is comment on another judge's decision, but I'm happy to talk about the facts of the case and talk to you more generally about the framework a judge uses in approaching a release decision.
Okay. Well, in this case, we had a prosecutor, and the Black Diamond Police Commander said he thought that it was an appropriate bond request. The prosecutor asked for a $5,000 bond on this guy, and Judge Allred released him on personal recognizance. So explain to me what the factors that come into this decision are.
Sure. So first of all, let me just preface this by saying what Mr. Chilcott did afterwards, stealing the car. I think we've all seen the video.
Yes.
With the dog inside. Obviously, that was an incredibly serious event and trying to run from the police. But the question is what happened on November 13th. So the 30,000-foot overview is that cases are filed into criminal court to judges with just the prosecutor's information. Judge Schaefer found probable cause that Mr. Chilcott had committed the offense of malicious mischief. That was breaking up the police interior of the police car, and put a $5,000 warrant on it. And then there's a live hearing where Mr. Chilcott's present with his lawyer and the prosecutor. So the rule is a criminal rule that is the basis for our decision. And people must be released on their personal recognizance. The rule actually says, unless you're charged with a capital crime, shall be ordered release on a personal recognizance pending trial unless one of three reasons apply. One is the failure to appear in the future. The second is a likely danger the accused will commit a violent crime. And the third is an intimidation of witnesses. So when you're looking at these factors, the rule goes on to talk more about that. And with Mr. Chilcott, because it wasn't a violent crime that was charged, we're talking about a property crime, you're looking at the likely failure to appear in court. So here's a couple of things.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, though, because he did have a violent history, had very violently resisted cops in the past where they had to and they had to use a taser on him again on October 28th. But he has a long criminal history and you know, very violent criminal history. And then the first point you brought up, Your Honor, was if there's a likelihood that they will not appear in court. This guy had no known address, and I would argue there was a certainty that he was not going to appear for a subsequent court hearing once he was released?
So those are some of the factors that we look at. First of all, let me talk about the offense itself. There are people that have had criminal convictions for violent offenses. Mr. Chilcott's two latest convictions, I think, were for misdemeanors. But, you know, people have convictions for robbery, assault, sexual assault, very serious cases. But this charge was not that. It was a property crime. I'm not saying he didn't act violently with the police when they tried to arrest him, but there was no underlying charge. So we're really looking at, in our view, at a property crime. The second is, okay, what about the failure to appear in court? Because you raise a good point. We look at the number of prior warrants. Is he employed? Does he have family ties? There are other factors in the rule. And at the hearing, the prosecutor, of course, argued about the offense, which I think you've accurately portrayed, that he resisted the arrest of the police. The defense lawyer brought up that he had a pending warrant from Black Diamond for $2,500, and he had had prior warrants in his earlier case, but that he had a job in a restaurant and that he had family member giving him financial support. So, you know, you're looking at limited information with a judge who hears that he does have a warrant, which he's going to have to go back in custody and address, and he has to get out in front of the Black Diamond court. He has to actually appear, and he apparently did get out, although I don't, frankly, have the records on that. He has prior warrants, but on the other hand, it looks like Mr. Chilcott now has a job, and he has somebody who's helping him out financially. So the judge essentially, and I've listened to the court hearing, said, you know, you have prior warrants, but I'm going to let you out on this offense. But if you blow it once, you're going back to jail. And that was the decision the judge made in this case.
But hasn't he blown it many times? And I'll combine that with another question. If he had family financial support, why not go with the prosecutor's recommendation of the $5,000 bond? I mean, if his family is not able or willing, because they don't think he's going to show up, to post that bond, I mean, isn't that the whole purpose of the bond, is a way to try to ensure that somebody will show up in court?
The purpose of the bond is to ensure that somebody will show up in court. It provides a measure of security for the court. Typically, someone would pay a percentage of the bond, and then the bonding company would guarantee the whole thing.
Right.
You know, the fact that he got released at the arraignment hearing is probably why no one ever really got to that next step. And I really have no information as to whether or not his sister in this instance would have posted money for a bond. All I can really tell you is that the judge had to weigh on the negative that he'd had some prior warrants on a case that was resolved in pretty minor convictions. And on the positive, he now had a job. He had somebody who was helping him out financially, and he was willing to go resolve the Black Diamond warrant, which he apparently did and got out, as we know, because he then stole the truck. So I think it's important, let me say this, it's important to look at this not in the rearview mirror, but what the judge knew at the time, because obviously if a judge knew that Mr. Chilcott was going to go out and steal a car with somebody's dog, you know, and that video is crazy. Let's just say it. He drove away with the gas pump still in the car.
Yeah.
If somebody knew had any inkling of that, they would not have let him out.
But that's where really I would argue, Judge, that the cops knew. The cops knew when he was released, and the cops are furious with our judicial system right now in King County, because it is their perception that the judges are letting people go when the cops have a certainty that they're going to reoffend. And there just seems to, I mean, because I appreciate you talking with me. I talk with cops all the time. And there seems to be a gigantic disconnect right now between law enforcement and the judicial system in King County.
Well, I would say that when it comes to violent offenses, we have a fair number of people in the King County jail being held because the judge has decided there's a substantial danger of them committing a violent offense. I think when it comes to property offenses, there's a stronger presumption of release because you're looking at likely failure to appear. Some people don't have very few warrants. Some people with more warrants are kept. It's it's sort of hard to address this in the abstract. And I understand that, and I very much respect the work that the police do each and every day in our community. We operate on the information at that arraignment hearing and that bond hearing given both by the prosecutor and by the defense attorney. And I think sometimes it's not always known by the public what information might be given at that hearing. Like, you probably didn't know that Mr. Chilcott apparently had a job and that he actually was being supported by a family member. And again, in looking at this now, you know, it's shocking what Mr. Chilcott did and what happened. But that's not the information that the judge had at the time.
Okay, and again, the cops are telling me that they are certain they're going to reoffend when they are released. But the cops are telling me that after the fact as well. All right, hold on, Judge. We're talking with King County Presiding Superior Court Judge James Rogers. And I have a lot more to ask him. So we will continue as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Continuing our conversation with King County Superior Court Presiding Judge James Rogers, we've been talking about what the public perceives to be a revolving door of justice. And, Your Honor, let's talk about the big picture here. Here's my perception, Your Honor, that right now Seattle City Council has announced that they want to, essentially decriminalize property crimes, just get people help. And it seems that we have prosecutors, judges, who are more interested in protecting the criminal than in protecting the general public, because we are letting people with 50, 72 prior convictions, we're letting them go free. And everybody tells me, well, that's in the best interest of the criminal. But nobody seems to be talking about what's in the best interest of the public that will almost certainly be victimized yet again once these guys do go free.
First of all, let me say that the city of Seattle has a separate judicial
system. Understood. Yes, I do understand that.
Prosecutor, yeah. And, Mr. Calderon, for example, I think you mentioned he went through that system. But
right.
Although it did come through our system for an offense after, I think, your story. But, victims have rights in court by statute. They have the right to be notified. They have the right to appear. They have the right to be heard. So I would say that judges take the rights of victims seriously. We are bound by our rules, criminal rules, that are approved by the Washington State Supreme Court, and they do give a very strong presumption of release unless certain factors are met. And,
yeah.
And that's what I would emphasize. And I would say, when it comes to a nonviolent offense, and maybe that's what we're talking about, really talking about nonviolent offenses here, I think that's what you are talking about, that's where the presumption of release is perhaps stronger than on a violent offense.
Well, but I also know that as judge, and by the way, we are talking with Judge James Rogers. He's the presiding judge for King County Superior Court. I also know that as judges, you have great judicial discretion. And yes, you're bound by the laws, and you do have guidelines that you must stay within, but you have great discretion. And if you have somebody who has committed, 30 crimes, don't you have to consider the likelihood because part of your job is helping keep all of us safe. Don't you have to consider the likelihood that somebody is going to reoffend, that whether it's break into a house, break into a car, violently assault somebody? Can that not be a factor at all in your decision making when we're letting these people walk free all the time?
When it comes to a property crime, we're restricted to talking about whether or not they're going to appear again. And so we do take prior criminal history into account. In fact, I was the chief criminal judge 2014, 2015, and I constantly looked up, just on the spot, frankly, because these are quick hearings, I looked up their prior cases. And if I saw warrants in their prior cases, and we also get a summary sheet, which has some information, I would, frankly, hold that against them. I would say, we've overcome the presumption of release.
Right.
You've got a lot of warrants here. You should be held because you're not going to come back. So I partially agree with you. When it comes to a violent offense, that's an additional factor. If there's a violent offense that's being charged violence in the past, that has to be taken into account.
Yeah, but we got a lot of violent people who have been through the system many, many times who are walking free. I mean, there's just no question about that.
Right. Well, I mean, all I would say is in a bond hearing, the more factors you have that overcome the presumption of release, the more the chances are you're going to be held. And as a result, probably won't surprise anyone listening to the station here, that there are a lot more people being held currently on violent offenses, violent charges, than property crimes.
Real quick, Your Honor, because I know we're almost out of time here, but I said something very harsh after the Anthony Chilcott thing went down on Monday, knowing that he had been released by a judge. And I want to talk about this in the big picture, but we have this specific that happened this week. And I said I thought Judge Allred had blood on his hands, and that when somebody who has a long history walks free, all the people on the road were in danger during that high-speed chase. The cops were in danger as they were being dragged down the road. A family was traumatized, having their truck and dog stolen, and this guy is now dead. Is it fair for me to assign blame to judges who let people walk free?
I think that's too broad a statement. If you're released for resisting arrest from the police, there's no chance that you're going to be able to predict that somebody's going to do the kind of outrageous behavior that Mr. Chilcott did, which was, harmful to – I agree with your description. Harmful to everyone where he was driving.
Sure.
Harmful to the people who had that dog in the car. There are times when you could see a judge – releases somebody for some kind of an offense, and you could say, look at the offense they're charged with, and now they committed another like offense. I think that's a closer call. But when we're talking about somebody who commits what we would consider, and I don't mean to minimize it, but in the scheme of the crimes that we see, this is a relatively more minor property offense. And I don't want to minimize it, because he was interfering with the police's ability to arrest him.
Right.
To go from there to a crime that could have resulted in somebody's injury, that could have harmed the dog, all sorts of things, I think is a stretch, frankly.
Okay.
It's the difficult part about being a judge. We do it every day, and we do the best we can.
And you're human beings. Do judges wrestle with guilt when somebody they've released either commits a violent crime or puts themselves in a situation that gets themselves killed?
All the time. I don't know if it's so much guilt as we just, we try to do the best we can, and we're constantly thinking about what we did. Did I do the right thing? Did I not do the right thing? And I guess guilt is an appropriate way to put it if something turns out badly. And you really do look back and you say to yourself, what should I have done in that instance? Did I do the right thing? I was talking about this recently with a story on the red flag laws, and those cases are so hard as well. So we have so many of those kinds of decisions that we make. Do we impose this no contact order? Do we keep somebody in jail?
Right.
Yes, we do second guess ourselves if something turns out badly, and I think it's a cautionary tale for the next time you make a decision.
Your Honor, when we traded emails a couple of days ago, you and I agreed that conversations like this are really good, really important, and I think it's important to shine a light on a system that a lot of people are frustrated with, and that's why I wanted to hear your perspective on this, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, Dory, I'm happy to have talked, and I'm happy to come on any time.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Judge James Rogers, presiding judge with King County Superior Court. I would love to hear your thoughts on what you just heard. 98973, that's our text line, 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.